The Tony Greig Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
For many years now, there has been a strong view that it's much harder to get into an England cricket team than it is to be thrown out. This theory was once again hotly debated before play between England and New Zealand started at Trent Bridge, and it flared again when the two players, Paul Collingwood and Ian Bell, both made ducks in England's first innings. England's batting has of late been fragile, and there have been calls for changes to be made. There's also been a debate about whether or not out-of-form players should be rested until they play themselves back into form. Andrew Strauss, for example, was dropped in New Zealand and told to go away and make runs. He wasn't happy about that, but he had no option, and when he did make runs, he was brought back into the team, and it seems that he's back to his old self again. Often this does depend on the team's options, and in England's case, Shah, Key and Bopara are all knocking on the door and have some justification for feeling shortchanged. The other factor that can play a part is how the team is going. The fact that England won at Old Trafford, even if they were a bit lucky, would have made the no-changes policy a tiny bit more palatable. Had they lost, it would have been a different story. New Zealand don't look much of a team right now, so England has got away with it so far. When South Africa arrives, it may be a little bit different. Having said this, one should dwell on the facts, and England at the time of recording looked like winning the series 2-0, so the selectors will not have to field too many questions this time round. England, thanks to Strauss and Kevin Peterson and some tail wagging, managed to get themselves a decent first inning score, 364, after having been put in on a seaman swing-friendly first day. If England found the going with the bat tough, the Kiwis found it far tougher. Anderson was a real handful when the ball was swinging, and he almost single-handedly reduced New Zealand to 96 for 6 by the end of day 2. The Kiwis were quickly wrapped up on day 3 and forced to follow on, and at the time of recording are batting away to save an innings defeat. They will definitely be praying for rain. England's hero, definitely James Anderson, with wonderful figures of 7 for 43. The big news emanating from the Australian camp in the West Indies came from Ricky Ponting, who seemed to be trying to tell the world something they already know, that the Aussie attack without Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath are not what they used to be. Ponting went further, stating that we're back to the field. That is not the sort of comment we often hear from Aussie captains. Over the years, they have tended to play the she'll be right mate card. Brett Lee and Stuart Clarke will continue to perform as well as anyone, but Mitchell Johnson and Beau Casson, who is likely to take over from Stuart McGill as the Aussie spinner, will not provide the backup power that the Aussie bowlers have enjoyed over the years. This does place extra pressure on the batting lineup because they have to give the bowlers more time to bowl the opposition out twice. Another point Ponting has alluded to. It may just be that we will see a few more drawn Aussie test matches. While the performance of the West Indies batsmen Shivnarine Chanderpaul in particular and Ramnaresh Sawan saw to it that the West Indies fought valiantly to save face and draw the second test in Antigua, they still have a long way to go in the bowling department. Chanderpaul is currently enjoying the best rating of his career and is surely in the form of his life. In the past 12 months, he has played 9 tests and plundered 1,062 runs at an average of over 100, including 5 centuries. And he'll be hoping for more of the same in the Barbados Test match. I still get the feeling that both these teams feel just a little under pressure. The West Indies, because that's the way it is these days, and the Australians, because they are missing Matthew Hayden, and now Brad Haddin, their keeper, has broken a finger and is unlikely to play. They will also have spinner Casson playing for the first time. My guess is that Ponting's strategy will be to pile it on in the first innings at a healthy run rate. His batting lineup of Jakes, Katich, Ponting, Hussey, Michael Clarke and Simons are all capable of big scores in quick time. The West Indies batting will include their captain, Chris Gayle, and he could make a bit of a difference. Mind you, the Aussies have absolutely nothing to lose as they have retained the Sir Frank Worrell Trophy already, so I expect they will win unless the West Indies play out of their skins, in which case I think it'll be a draw. Sorry, but I just can't see the West Indies beating even this understrength Australian team. Pakistan fast bowler Mohammad Asif has found himself in trouble in Dubai. It's a little hard to know exactly what's going on, but if innocent of anything underhand, Asif must be seething mad. It's taken a whole week for a public prosecutor to fix a date to decide whether Asif should be charged for possessing drugs or released. Asif was stopped and held at Dubai Airport on Sunday the 1st of June after authorities found a suspicious substance in his possession. There were also reports that he lost his temper and slapped one of the officials at the airport, but this hasn't been verified yet. The results of the tests conducted on him and the substance have been received by the investigators, but they won't say anything about them at this stage. The Pakistan board say their lawyer in Dubai is on the case and, like Asif, is waiting for something concrete to emerge. Asif has already been dropped from the Pakistan squad that has left for Bangladesh to play in a triangular one-day series, also involving India, and says the substance found on him was a medicine given to him by an Indian practitioner in herbs for some health problem he's experiencing. We will doubtless hear more about this very soon.
What's eating Tony Greig?
How's this for some big news at a time when 2020 cricket seems to be spiralling out of control? Four of the world of cricket's major national governing bodies have unveiled plans for cricket's first Champions League tournament. The authorities in England, India, Australia and South Africa have agreed to an 8-team autumn event with a £2.5 million cheque for the winners. The tournament will be played in either India or the Middle East. The announcement comes after discussions between the England and Wales Cricket Board, Cricket Australia, the Board of Control for Cricket in India, and Cricket South Africa, and is inspired by the success of the IPL. English cricket will be represented by their two finalists from the ECB 2020 Cup. They will line up against India's IPL winners, Rajasthan Royals and Chennai Super Kings, Australia's winners, Western Australia and Victoria, and the Titans and KwaZulu-Natal Dolphins from South Africa. This is surely a case of jumping the gun. Time should have been allocated to allow all cricket's governing bodies to settle on an international modus operandi for the 2020 format before greed destroys it all. Think for a moment how New Zealand, Sri Lanka, the West Indies and Pakistan must feel having been left out of these discussions. These four countries need support more than all the others if world cricket standards are to improve. But right now, on the money spinning 2020 front, they're being treated like second-class citizens.
My favourite cricketer.
My favourite cricketer, well, this week, Stuart McGill is my subject. Stuart McGill, of course, has the best strike rate of any modern leg spin bowler. So his sudden decision to retire has surprised everyone. He has, after all, been waiting for a long time to become Australia's number one spinner. And those close to McGill, I don't think will have been quite so surprised because he has recently experienced a few nasty injury problems and does also have a few options for the next stage of his life. McGill, like Warne, wasn't that keen on Buchanan's boot camp a little while back, and that is where he sustained one of his more serious injuries. Very frustrating for him. Watching him bowl in the test in Antigua was painful. It was just not the normal Stuart McGill. There were long hops and full tosses aplenty, and my immediate feeling was that all was not well with him. There have been suggestions that he overindulged one evening, but I don't for one second believe that, and in any event, the Aussie journalist who wrote the story is notoriously unreliable. McGill is an intellectual type, having once read 24 books on a tour of Pakistan, and unlike his mainly beer-drinking teammates, McGill is a wine connoisseur. In fact, there's a show down in Australia. Stuart McGill is a good bloke. All he needs is a little breathing space. Not the sort of reaction he received from former Aussie spinner and now spinner coach Terry Jenner, who suggested last week, on hearing of McGill's retirement in the West Indies, that he should give the game away completely rather than prevent new young spinners from emerging. Give him a break. He is, after all, a member of the 200 Club, and that, in the Warne era, is a great effort.
One question only.
On to the question now, and I've got one here from Andrew from Vancouver. He wants to know how I think the fast bowlers I played with from England, guys like John Snow and Bob Willis and Lever, would do today in comparison to the newer crop of reverse swing bowlers, guys like Harmison, Hoggard, Sidebottom, Flintoff, etc. Were they technically different, faster, etc., or have pitches, balls and other factors like athleticism and fitness changed significantly? Well, Andrew, things certainly have changed, but had Snow, Willis and Lever been around now, they too will have adopted some, if not most, of the innovations. John Snow, in my view, is a better fast bowler than the current English crop and right up there with the very best ever. I'm not going to comment on technique except to say that bowling is the sort of exercise that requires bowlers to bowl to stay fit. Exercises don't, in my view, make bowlers better. things have changed quite appreciably, especially in the training front, but balls and pitches are much the same. Bats have definitely improved, and I also think that reverse swing has led to actually less swing. I've always been a strong believer in sticking with one shape, because I've seen so many bowlers lose their regular swing by trying to make the ball go in both directions. There's a bit of food for thought for you. Please don't forget to email your questions to tony@cricinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the places where you're from. I'll pick the best questions and answer it in next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Cricinfo Talk, signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.